Nobody knows what's going on, but we watch the Olympics. We just turn on our TVs and become obsessed with sports we haven't thought about in 4 years. This is why we made the Ringer Guide to the Summer Games. I'm your host, Roger Sherman. Each day during the Tokyo Olympics, I'll tell you about a different sport, athlete, or storyline. We'll be releasing new episodes every day starting July 19th. Follow along on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts so you know exactly how to watch the Olympics.
So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe Ferrero Rocher je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,79 Euro. Außerdem Mionetto Prosecco Spumante Doc je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 5,99 Euro. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
We're also brought to you by TheRinger.com as well as the Rewatchables, where we are doing Fight Club. It's going up tomorrow. Me and Chris Ryan did it. The reason we did it is because our Woodstock 99 documentary is coming on HBO on Friday. It's going to be on HBO on Friday night. It's also going to be available on HBO Max all day Friday. It is a sneak preview of our Music Box series that we are launching later this fall. It's 6 documentaries in all. This is the first one. We wanted to time it with the 22nd anniversary of Woodstock. This is a great one. Directed by Garrett Price. It is about a 3-day weekend where basically everything goes to hell. It's more of a horror movie than a music documentary, but highly recommend it. Can't wait for you to see it. And since we had it coming, we had to do Fight Club because Fight Club also came out in 1999. It taps into some of the same themes and kind of makes sense as a combo. So that was one we had been saving for the right time, Fight Club. An all-timer, and Chris and I, it's coming on Monday. Also, Joe House is coming up in a second. He just did Fairway Rollin' with Nathan Hubbard, where they broke down the Open. Colin Morikawa winning his second major. So they went on right after it was done, posted a great podcast about that if you want to hear House. We're going to talk about golf at the tail end here, but if you want to hear the full deep dive with House and with Nathan, you can check out Fairway Rollin'. Also, we have a new podcast launching this week, Gene and Roger. Which I think is launching on the Big Picture feed, the first episode this week, but it's another narrative series from us. We just finished the Len Bias series, which was awesome. What if the Len Bias story, and now moving right to Gene and Roger, which is another really good one about Siskel and Ebert, who had an enormous impact, not only in the movie industry, but on pop culture too, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, even the 2000s. So Gene and Roger, that's coming this week. Don't forget about the Rewatchables. Don't forget about the Woodstock documentary on HBO and on HBO Max on Friday. It's coming. Finals will be over by then. You'll have time. You'll be ready for it. Coming up, House and I are going to talk about all kinds of basketball stuff, some golf, maybe even some football futures. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, we are taping this. It is mid-afternoon Pacific time on Sunday. My buddy Joe House is here. He just did a Fairway Rollin' earlier about the Open. We'll talk about that later. I want to talk hoops. No podcast for me after Saturday night's Game 5 because it was Saturday night. I had a birthday party to go to. Watched it at the party. It was super fun. Came home, watched it again. Watched it a third time this morning. House, I am convinced that a Bucks title and the Giannis leap that we've had the last 4 weeks is the best possible thing that could have happened for the NBA. I'm talking big picture, what it means for the league, the storyline behind it, the guy who stayed, the guy who could have had everybody tempting him with, you know, come here to Dallas, you could play with Luka. Go to the New York Knicks, you can play there. Go to one of the LA teams, go to one of the big markets, you could be a bigger star. He's not about that. Everyone said he was never about that. Stays with his team. They make it better enough that they can compete for a finals. They get some breaks. And then they kind of hit rock bottom. Game 5 Brooklyn series. He sucks it up. And he's just like, I'm not going down. I'm doing everything I can to get here. Hurts his knee. Comes back. Has 2 iconic plays in the finals. And did everything we've ever wanted from this guy. I gotta say, he's a level higher than I ever thought he was going to be as a player. And just in general, it's such a heartwarming story, isn't it? Like, we have no skin in this game. I'm a Boston fan. You're a DC fan. I don't really care who wins the finals unless I'm betting on it. But I think this is such a great basketball story. I'm really like enamored with it.
It's a damn good story. And it fits exactly the overwhelming, overarching narrative of this NBA season, which to me is last man standing. Like, you know, I would have been fine with a Suns victory in these finals and the coronation of Chris Paul and, you know, everything that goes along with that. And the resuscitation of that franchise under Monty Williams and the story of that Suns team coming together in the bubble last year and ripping off 8 wins and basically not looking back from that. Like, that's a bunch of great storylines.
And the Devin Booker ascension.
Yeah, too. Right. The emergence of Devin Booker as a super duper star.
And Ayton kind of winning winning his number one pick status.
All of that, right? Validating his number one pick status. Yes, all of those storylines that go along with the Suns fit. But this season, across the board, has been about durability, about, you know, just hanging in there. It's been a war of attrition. And that's been the theme that we've been seeing, you know, really from the beginning with all of the crazy schedule. And, you know, we've seen guys, LeBron complained about all the injuries in the playoffs and made the point about, you know, I told everybody that this was a risk. I mean, and Chris Paul properly clap back at that with, like, you know, we all had an opportunity to express our point of view on this before the season started. But, like, you know, Jokic won the MVP of the league because he played the most games. He was excellent. He was terrific. He delivered that Denver team to its very highest potential. But really, he won it because he played. He played the games.
It was a reliability, durability award.
And really, that's the theme of this season. And for Giannis especially to come back from an injury that to all of our eyes looked like it was going to be, you know, a complete, you know, a bunch of tears, you know, ligament tears. And instead, he comes back and he has iconic finals performances. And I am very happy to report the odds flashed up yesterday afternoon.
Oh,
there was some plus odds for Giannis as the MVP of these finals, because, you know, when we're sitting here looking at it, two to two, it's either going to be CP3 or Giannis. And I saw plus odds for Giannis and I jumped right on it. And you know, fingers crossed.
The rest might be history.
We'll see.
I had Bucks in six before the series, 5-1 odds. Didn't touch it. Didn't really bet any individual game because I just didn't like the individual game odds. But in the back of my head, I was like, I think the Bucks can win. They're going to win game 3. That's how it goes. And I think they can win game 4. And then by the time we started heading to game 5, so many things in the series were falling in their favor. But to me, the biggest thing was just like, I think they have the best player. And how many finals have we watched where whoever was either the best player going into it or the best player as the series evolved, that guy's team usually wins. There's exceptions. But I think that thing, I was thinking about the journey of Giannis, and we've talked a lot about him the last few weeks, but I really think it's the most important storyline in a while. You know, he comes in, grows 3 inches his first year. His heading into his second year, there was some exhibition season footage. And I remember Jalen and I did one of our last previews before that series got canceled because I got suspended. And I showed him young Giannis stuff. And I'm like, what's this? This looks like something. And he's like, no, too early. But it was at that stage where it was like, oh, this guy might not be a bust, basically. And then over the next 2 years, he becomes the freak. He wins over everyone on Twitter. And it really seems like, oh, this guy's going to be a really good player. He's going to be an all-star. This is great. And then something shifts again. He wins 2 straight MVPs. But there still seemed that piece missing. And think all the dumb arguments we had. And we have even had some on the show about the Batman-Robin stuff with him. And it was like, he's better than Robin, but he's still going to need like his version of Kobe in the early 2000s if he's ever going to want to win the title. But my long point leads to this. The stuff he's done the last couple rounds where he's kind of been the Batman, not the Robin. He's added things to his game. Now the Bucks fans will be like, no, no, he did this in February against Orlando. It's like, no, he's solving shit.
Yeah.
He's solving angles. It's not about just put the wall up and Giannis doesn't know what to do. Just make him shoot threes. Like, he's attacking on 45 degree angles now. The stuff he did, there was that one play in the fourth quarter yesterday when it's like 7 minutes left and he had Ayton in front of him on the left side. And he just kind of went right at him, half euro stepped him, went left, but did a righty scoop shot and got the foul. And it was just like, it feels like he's got like 11 or 12 moves now that he can kind of draw from during these games, right?
Well, he's definitely helped by the fact that they're playing the Suns, because the Suns do their very best to muster a version of the wall, but it's really not that formidable a wall. And I don't say this with the intent of dismissing or demeaning how the growth of Giannis and what we've seen out of him in terms of his adapting to what that defense is showing him. But Ayton as the primary defender just is not, he can't handle Giannis one-on-one.
Well, and as a semi-careful defender too, because he doesn't want to get in foul trouble. So I think like if he had a really good backup, and he gets in anyway, he put 45 minutes yesterday, but I think it's always in the back of his mind, and Giannis has been really smart. He's just going at him.
That's making
him have to defend him. I don't know if he would have done that a year ago. I don't know if he would have realized, like, I'm going to back you down, do this jump hook thing.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to do this little one-legged floater over your head. I don't care if you foul me. I'll make one or two. I'm just going to keep going to the line and you guys will all foul out. Like, he doesn't look back. I remember when my daughter was playing soccer, like 10-year-olds, they start really thinking about stuff, like 9, 10-year-olds. If they miss a kick or something, you can see it gets in their head. And her coach was like, just be a goldfish. Just swim around. Whatever happened 2 seconds ago doesn't matter. You're a goldfish. Just swim. And I feel like Giannis is a goldfish. So how many free throws did he miss in the last 2 minutes? Like five in a row? He just kept going.
He was 4 of 11 from the free throw line last night.
And he missed his last five?
It was game changing. It was game changing. I mean, it permitted the Suns to come all the way back.
But that's their Achilles heel, right?
Opportunities.
Yeah, Milwaukee's Achilles heel is the free throw shooting. They're a guy short. Phoenix's Achilles heel is they're too small and they're two guys short.
Well, now on that point, Giannis led everybody in offensive rebounds last night. He had 5 right. offensive rebounds, and that, you know, has been the story. The Suns' inability to secure a defensive rebound when they need it, and the Suns' turnovers are the thing. Those are effort kinds of plays. Now, I'm not suggesting that the Suns haven't been expending max effort, but, you know, those are the that's the nitty gritty stuff that will determine this championship, I think.
Well, and that's size and length and athleticism, which the Bucks have. They threw that lineup out last night with it was like Lopez, Giannis, Tucker, Middleton, and I think Connaughton. They didn't even have a point guard. Wait, back to the Giannis point. We were kind of bummed out about this finals, like deep down, because it didn't have it just felt like an asterisk here. I hate the word asterisk, but it felt like a giant footnote where just all these great players weren't in it. We had of the best 11 players in the league, 10 of them weren't in the finals, right? And then you think the way this worked out was pretty awesome. We had the Nets didn't get to rig their roster and try to win a title that way. Just with karma and bad luck just kind of got them. Same thing for the Lakers, who rigged their title because they were able to get Davis to the Lakers and get everyone else to back off. That backfired this year.
The Lakers fans love you.
Well, I'm just, the Bucks were kind of the homegrown old school title, which is like, you know, there's multiple ways to win a title, but I always enjoy the ingenuity, loyalty. Hey,
no lottery picks, right?
Right.
Giannis picks.
I think their highest pick. So that whole part's fun. The whole thing that Milwaukee hasn't won in 50 years. I mean, you're getting that either way with Milwaukee or Phoenix. CP3 now, if Milwaukee ends up winning game 6, which I feel like they're going to win game 6. I just think they're better. But, you know, we've seen series where the team was better and blew the game 6, San Antonio against Miami in 2013. CP3 now losing this finals becomes a historic rings culture guy. He might
rings
even be
culture.
Well, the whole thing when everybody talks about rings, do they matter? And they have to list all the players, and it's like Barkley, Malone, Elgin Baylor, and they go through them. So the best 10 guys who've never won a title: Barkley, Malone, Elgin, Chris Paul, Nash, Harden, Gervin, Ewing, Iverson, Russ, in some order. You can order those guys any way you want. CP3, this is the closest, I think, in the finals that any of those guys got, except for Ewing. Ewing
yeah, right.
had up 3-2, Houston, game six, game seven, but they kind of needed one stop down the stretch of game six. They needed to make one shot. They couldn't do it. And then they lose in game seven. And my thing was, like, I thought the right team won because I thought Hakeem was slightly better than Ewing. And I also thought, like, if your entire season's coming down to a John Starks three with Hakeem in his face, maybe you shouldn't win the title. But that was the closest out of those 10 guys. Now, Elgin kind of won a ring because he was on that 72 Lakers team, but he retired during the season. But, it's like barely counts. Out of all those guys, Ewing came the closest, but Chris, up to nothing in the finals, not getting it is devastating.
So the one thing I hope we get after this NBA season is over is
I know what you're going to say.
The revelation from him or through some, you know, journalism investigative wise as to his injury. What happened to him? Because unless he is able to get himself to Germany between now and Tuesday for an injection of the super steroids, you know.
The super I'm pretty sure those are illegal, but
Kobe went to Germany. All I know is Kobe went to Germany.
No, he liked the food there.
He got a treatment. Well, so, I mean, maybe Chris would like it as well.
He got some washed blood injected back in his knee. I think it was legal.
Well,
Do you think Chris needs it? But he needs it in like four parts of his body.
It does look like it, right? Because this is the conversation that we're having as we're watching the games, and we're all super attuned, and you and Russillo talked about it after game four.
Injured or choke. And when he's not playing well, he's injured. And when he is playing well, he's fine. So that means then he choked in game four. Like we're going back and forth. I think
we know the answer though. I don't, there isn't a difference. He's not choking. He didn't play. He didn't get minutes in game four. He is hurt. There's no argument about it.
Or is he old? Cause this
both,
is a different,
both.
I would say he's more old than hurt because everybody's hurt. Giannis is fucking hurt. Giannis can't even do the Euro steps anymore.
Yeah, Giannis is 10 years younger than him.
I know, but that's the thing. I mean, if you're trying to win the title with a 37-year-old guy and you got to go four rounds in a whole condensed season, like this is the shit
that
happens.
That's right. All
I have
true.
Some stats for you. Chris Paul from round two through the first two finals games, he was 25-9, four rebounds. He shot 52-50-95, only 2.1 turnovers, 4.6 free throw attempts. Remember that, 4.6 free throw attempts. His last three, 17-9-2, 52-44-67. Still not bad for the splits. 3.3 turnovers, 1.0 free throw attempts. And the body language doctor has not liked the body language from him.
What's not... Even the language, it's the body. The body language doctor doesn't like the body. Because the body, he can't penetrate and kick. You shared with us the shot chart from games three and four. Milwaukee has taken away the corner three from the Suns. But the Suns have been complicit in this attribute because CP3 cannot penetrate and kick. He just can't physically do it. We're wondering whether he can dribble with his left hand.
Yeah, sometimes he can, sometimes he can't. They're making Booker, they're kind of good with Booker getting 40 points.
It's apparent. Now, I mean, it's a risky strategy.
Yeah, but it's a little reminiscent. I think the first guy I remember doing this was Pop in 05 against Nash. When he was just like, we're getting rid of everybody else. Nash, knock yourself out, get your 35-40. Nash kind of didn't know what to do. He had one-on-one. It was the right matchup every time. Same thing with Booker. They've closed out on the corners. It happened again. We talked about it on this pod after game four with Jackie and Sira. And then same thing, game five. The Suns shot really well. That was one of the weird things about this game. They shot 55%. They made 2 out of every 3 threes, 68%. They shot 90% from the free throw, and they're playing home, and they lost.
Your boy, Zach Cram, we have a nice Cram fact in here. Teams shooting 60% on at least 20 three-point attempts were 12-0, winning by an average margin of 24 points. And the Suns last night shot 62% on 21 three-point attempts and lost the game. I mean, it's some record-breaking stuff is going on here.
It's a tough one. Well, going back to the Giannis and the outcome, and then we'll take a break, but KD makes that three.
It's a damn big toe away.
So we have a ton of what ifs that come out of these playoffs.
Yes.
We have Chris Paul now as this just all time, like, I feel bad for that guy. What a worrier. I'm actually not going to hold the fact that he's never won a finals against him. But by the way, he never won a finals. You have the old school homegrown guy leading his team, not thinking about leaving. You have that whole thing. And on top of it, KD stepping on the line put some chest hair on Giannis.
It turns out
to be the greatest thing that ever happened to Giannis, because if KD hits that three and the Nets go to the next round, they probably win, and maybe the Suns beat the Nets. Kyrie might be back at that point. Maybe Harden's okay. Maybe the Nets win easily. But we never have these last two rounds for Giannis. And then we head to the next season around Giannis. All right, what's up with him? What is he?
Well, and you know, Coach Bud gets fired. So immediately, yeah. Milwaukee in a type of turmoil, just because it all comes down to KD's big toe.
It's crazy. We're going to take a quick break. I have some more Giannis stuff for you. I'm going to blow your mind with some Giannis stuff. Big picture. And the reason we keep talking about Giannis on this podcast is because this is some, you know, I had that my book, The Pantheon, there's 16 guys in it, added Curry recently. It's not a long list. The stuff Giannis is done in this playoffs, in these finals, the game-to-game stuff, the consistency, the greatness, the stats, all of it.
Coming back from the knee!
With the knee injury on top of it, but he's averaging 32, 13, and 6 in the finals. 61% shooting. For the playoffs, he's 29, 13, and 5. All right, let's talk about the company that's in. We have Shaq in 00 and 01 with 30 and 15. Right in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
We have Shaq in 02, the 29 and 13, exactly the same. Now, Shaq, those three straight finals, we're like, wow, that's one of the greatest three finals runs we've ever had. Giannis has matched it for a year. Kareem in 74 loses the finals, but put up a 32 and 16. Kareem in 1980, which was his greatest series, in my opinion, 32 and 12. Hakeem, 94, 29 and 11. Hakeem, 95, 33 and 10. And then Moses in 83, 26 and 16. So those are all winning performances with big stats. And my point is this. I had in my book and still on my list, I have Shaq. I have Kareem. Now he's third or maybe fourth. I have Moses and Shaq and Hakeem all in the top 15. And Giannis is in the neighborhood.
In the neighborhood.
He just drove his car into one of the parking spaces right next to those fucking guys for an entire playoffs. And he's about to win the title. And I just didn't expect this. Did you?
Well, it was plausible at the outset of the playoffs, right?
Fair.
Because, and I'm not, again, I ought not to confess this, 9-1 for Milwaukee to win the title before the playoffs began. I got on that because it was like, look, there's definitely a path here. I mean, the Nets were the prohibitive favorites, but the Nets had those injury concerns. Yeah. And that was even before Harden. Crisco'd his way out of the playoffs. But we didn't know what we were going to get with Philly, and Philly was underwhelming, and that Atlanta.
Or we did know. But we were getting 3 field goals and 7 fourth quarters from Ben Simmons. We kind of knew that deep down.
But this was the thing that made the Bucks compelling. Like, could Giannis? And there was also legit Coach Bud questions, and I'm not sure that every Coach Bud question has been answered satisfactorily, but the combination of Giannis and Coach Bud together on this journey, just enough doubt to make it, you know, a giant, I don't know, but also plausible because Giannis can elevate, and he did elevate. And we knew that Middleton and Holiday were wild cards, and they both matured. They're both
on
the
stage. Wait,
hold
that Middleton point, because we didn't know Middleton could be like a legit second guy on
right,
a finals
no, we
team.
Didn't. We did not know that.
I didn't know that.
They're the supporting cast. They're the crucial role players in this thing.
Holiday's been the only one that I feel like he's exactly who I thought he was throughout this playoffs. He's going to go 4-for-20 every once in a while. He's going to have games where it looks like he needs LASIK surgery. He's going to have games where he's completely dominant defensively as a perimeter guy. And he's going to have great two-way games like last night. He's all over the map, but he's good.
Until last night, he was under 35% shooting in these finals, and he was volume shooting. I mean, it wasn't like he was like these were 3-for-11 performances. I mean, he's getting it up. But one of the things that jumped out from the stories of last night, and you mentioned this on the defensive side, and this is the thing: if you're thinking about the Bucks and their prospects, Holiday is a lockdown defender. When Holiday has been on Booker or CP3, the expected points per possession for the Suns is like 22 points per 100, 100 possessions. When he's not on one of those two guys, both of those guys, it jumps up to almost 40 points per 100. So, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. We see it with our own eyes with Holiday. But the idea of the Bucks in these playoffs came down to these very, very factors, right? Like Giannis next level, Budenholzer not fucking it up, and then Holiday and Middleton, can they do it? And it's cool. We're here.
Final stats. Some of these are great. I actually spent an hour going through all this stuff today. Shaq in 2000 in the finals, 38-17. Just every game.
Wow.
01, 33-16-5.
Shaq.
02, slumped a little, 36-12.
The daddy.
Three straight years. Listen, that's why I will always defend Shaq. He fucking kicked everyone's ass for three straight years.
Yeah.
Kareem in 1980, 33-14. Moses in 83, 26-18. Hakeem in 95, 33-12. LeBron had two good ones. He's a non-center, but in 2016, 30-11-9, and 2020, 30-12-9. So back to Giannis, 32-13-6. Again, there was a parking space in this garage that we didn't know Giannis was allowed on this level of the garage. And he's kind of backing the car into the garage.
What's he driving?
This is a thing.
What kind of car is he driving? What do you like? What do you like Giannis in?
It's some awesome like Greek Range Rover. It's got no roof. It's got all like kinds of shit. It's like
something Italian. I like something Italian.
The Himalaya. Have you seen the Himalaya car? I think it's like a Himalaya.
I don't know that one.
The 42 club, as you know, the points, rebounds, assists. If you're 42 and over and you've played at least 12 games, you're special. It's not a long list. We've talked about many times this pod. Well, there's a 47 club.
Oh, Jesus.
For guys post-merger, it's LeBron, MJ, Hakeem, Shaq, Kareem, and Giannis. Those are our seven guys. LeBron's done it four times, by the way. Shaq's done it twice. The other guys have done it once. But again, LeBron, MJ, Hakeem, Shaq, Kareem, Giannis. Going back to the garage. Now, here's the other thing going on here. Defensively, he's better than Shaq was. Hakeem was incredible. I don't think he was better defensively than Hakeem was. I think he's in the vicinity of it, though.
Yes.
I think he was a better defensive and a more impactful defensive player than Kareem at any point of the second half of his career. And then Moses was really an offense rebounder. Defense wasn't 100% his thing. You throw in the defense stuff that he's done and his ability to play against all these different types of guys, right? He's been matched up on Paul and Booker on the perimeter. He's had to guard Aiden. He's been all over the map. And on the key play yesterday, which if I'm a Suns fan, I'm replaying that. That's their version of Larry Bird missing the shot in 87 by an inch. Booker, really good drive on the defining play of the game. They're down one. Drives hard left. Goes in the lane on Tucker. Tucker, who I think has sucked in this series, actually plays really good defense. Stays in front of him. Doesn't foul him. Giannis comes over. Makes him guess. Booker's stuck. and he's about to turn and throw it to Chris for this
yep.
career-defining three.
That's right.
But Holiday sniffs it out, and he's already grabbing for the ball, grabs it, turns. I'm watching this live, and I see Giannis. He's doing that run down the court thing, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to go for the alley-oop. Are you fucking kidding me? And I didn't think Holiday was going to throw it to him, and he throws it to him. Paul shoves him, which, by the way, was a flagrant at every point of the season except for last night for some reason. But right. that's they've called that as a flagrant all year. And Giannis finishes it game time. But that's I think that is one of the great plays of the last 20 years. Like just for significance, everything that happened, the three different guys on the Bucks all making like really great plays. And then like an athletic play that I feel like how many guys make that play? Giannis Robinson? Young Shaq?
I honestly am equally impressed by the balls on Holiday to throw it up there.
Like, incredible balls.
That's what I'm like. It was an all-time two-way play. I mean, mentioned
think about
it.
If he fucked up the alley-oop.
That's how there badly are a million that things gone. That can go wrong. A million things can go wrong on that play. Right. Absolutely right. I mean, it has to be perfect. And it was bang, bang, split second, like the sensible thing. And nobody would have been mad. Would have been for him to just dribble for a little while
right.
and run some clock.
And go to the free throw line. He's a good free throw shooter. Yeah,
exactly right. Of course. But nope, we're going to put the hammer down. We've got a one of one in Giannis. If I throw it anywhere near the rim, he's going to get it. And he's going to finish it. And by golly, I mean, it was an all caps wowie. Wowie zowie.
Well, and there's another thing going on here. If the Bucks blow that game, it caused me to make my list of what were the worst finals losses of this century. Because it would have been on it. The worst finals loss of the century and maybe all time was the Ray Allen shot.
Yeah.
That's the worst basketball loss that's ever happened, in my opinion. I don't think there's ever been a more devastating loss. But I had some other good ones. I just went 21st century. The Horry game. Game 5, 2005, Detroit. San Antonio, which is known as the Horry game, but the real diehard hoop fans remember it as I can't fucking believe Rasheed Wallace left Horry open when he inbounded the ball and then went right to the, and had a wide open three. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, ball don't lie.
Ball don't lie. And stay with Robert Horry. That should have been his two things. So that was a tough one. Lakers 08, game 4 against Celts, up 25. We come back, make a bunch of threes. To me, that's the day small ball was basically created because we come back with this small ball lineup with KG and we're shooting threes. And that was the lineup he should have played all year. And we're always like, every time you play that lineup, we score.
They flipped that stat. They showed that a little bit, you know, that game as a marker for the comeback that the Bucks had by coming back from 16. You know, they were flashing big comebacks in finals. And that was one of them.
Well, and that's when threes are such a big part of these quick comebacks now. Yes, you make four threes in 2 minutes and
bang.
We did a Book of Basketball podcast on this game, Orlando 2009, game 4. A Stan Van Gundy catastrophe, coaching catastrophe with a little Jameer Nelson and a little Dwight Howard sprinkled in, but that ends up getting the Lakers. That was a bad one. Dallas 2006, game 3. Series seems over. Huge comeback. Wade starts getting every call. Game 5 was worse because that was the Bennett Salvatore.
Yes.
I'll never get over how bad that call was. I don't even like Dallas. I don't even think I bet on that series. That was one of the most horrifying moments that led to Cuban screaming at Stern, you fixed the game.
Like, yeah.
All that stuff. Now we go to 2016, Golden State, Cleveland, game 7. Golden State's last 6 minutes are, I think that's the second worst loss of the last 20.
Wow.
Because you just need to hit one three and you win the game. Just hit one shot and you win the title at home. Just one. The Cavs don't even score the last 5 minutes other than the Kyrie three.
It's stunning for Golden State to be in that drought. That's the thing that's so stark about it.
They're home and the fans are nervous and it's just a rock fight and Festus Ezeli is in there for some reason and LeBron
amazing.
Hits two threes over him. Then nobody scores for 4 minutes. Brutal. Boston, 2010, game 7.
Yeah.
Where tough they blew one. The 18-point lead. They just ran out of, they wouldn't have enough guys.
Yeah.
And the Lakers were really good, but we were like a guy short because Perkins was out. And then the last one I have is Cleveland 2018, aka the J.R. Smith game. It was a game one, so not as devastating, but
yes,
LeBron, and LeBron knew it. He knew that was it for the series. They weren't going to beat them five times. Right. So I have those nine. And I think if the Bucks blew that game, I think it's the third worst out of all those. If you're up 10 and you're missing free throws and you leave Paul wide open on that three at the top of the perimeter for no reason at all, Booker hits that crazy going to his right three, and then you just can't, you just seem nervous and you fall apart and you lose that, fucking awful.
Yeah, they were up 10 in the fourth quarter. I think they were up 14 at one point in the fourth quarter, but they were up 8 with 2 minutes and 23 seconds left.
Right. They're up 121-12. They with 2.5. They were up 10 with like 3:20 left.
And we had two misses from Middleton and a Holiday miss. And then they put the freak on the line. And this is again like what a fine line. We're in here extolling the virtues of the freak. And yet that game was him standing on the freak. And by the way, the free throw that he missed after the alley-oop.
Brilliant miss.
Which, you know. Should have been. This is why the Suns are going to lose this series. They couldn't get a defensive rebound when they needed it. It's just that close between these two teams.
I think the biggest mistake they made in game five was not playing Cam Johnson over Crowder. I think they're a little too in love with the safety of Crowder, the same way the Bucks are a little too in love with the safety of PJ Tucker.
Sure.
But I think for game six, Cam Johnson's the guy I've asterisked. They need more from him in that game because one of the things with him is he rebounds and he'll come in and I feel like he would have gotten that free throw rebound. I don't even think he was on the court. Booker. So that last possession, which I think is one of the all-time great finals plays. Like it's like you could Zabruder from that play. Great Tucker D, great Giannis help, great Holiday strip, right? Three greats in a row. Great Giannis sprint, and then a double great alley-oop. And on the flip side of that, Booker makes that shot, and I think they win. I don't think the Bucks. I think they just would have double-teamed Middleton and gotten a bad shot, and it's like this incredible fork in the road moment for Booker because he was right at the precipice of, wow, this guy might not just be like a multi-time all-star. Like we have to recalibrate what we thought. The stuff he was doing as a two guard is, you know, less than 10 guys ever, but he gets stripped and now it is where it is.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you think Monty Williams made a mistake by not taking the timeout?
I don't.
Yeah.
To me, that's a trust your team. I watched it a bunch of times today because I was trying to figure out what he should have done. And I actually think he did the right thing. I think the Bucks just played it perfect.
Well, and they only had one timeout left, and it was at the 30-second mark, and you have to have that timeout, you know, at the end to advance the ball. Yeah, for sure.
The most interesting thing about that play is Chris kind of runs away from it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he was afraid of it. I'm just saying Booker had the ball in the right corner on the Bucks side. They get the rebound. Start stripping up, no timeout. Chris goes all the way to the other side, like a 2018 Rocket style.
I think he was running to a spot, though. I saw it. I know what you're talking about. They crisscrossed. Right?
I want Chris Paul to have the ball with 20 seconds
left. So this is the thing. This is what I mean.
If he's healthy. Maybe he's not healthy. Maybe he knew.
Right? And who?
But like, the play before, remember, with like 50 seconds left on the right side, he got the switch on Connaughton, and then he dusted Connaughton on the baseline.
And
I just want Chris Paul to side in the game. He's Chris Paul.
And let's give him credit. He really did almost decide the game.
I know.
He engineered that comeback. It was his smart plays and his finishing and his execution that brought them all the way back to that precipice of 1 point away. I mean, Booker also, who was incandescent, but
he
really
was awesome.
CP3 driving that train, driving the comeback train.
We didn't even get the CP jog toward Booker and Booker like look him off, or the semi jog and then the comeback. He was just like, Book's got this. I thought that was really fascinating.
Well, you know, part of the thing, and I don't remember where I saw it, might have been ESPN, on drives to the lane like that by Booker, the Suns were 7 of 10 with no turnovers.
Wow.
So when Booker was penetrating in that way, that was the only turnover on that kind of a penetration play. And it makes perfect sense that CP3 would be confident that Booker would do it, and that Booker himself was confident that he could do it.
I have a question for you, but we're going to take it to a break, and I want you to think about it. Is Devin Booker the best two guard in the league right now? You mull that over. We're going to take a break. All right. So you can go into next season, and you can have any two guard for next season. Are you taking James Harden? Are you taking Booker? Or are you taking somebody else?
Wow. Just one season?
The reason I bring this up is because this would have been a ridiculous conversation 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You would have been like, what the fuck are you talking about?
That's right.
Because the thing with Booker that's been so impressive, and I know the Bucks shot well yesterday, but he's really playing hard on both ends. I like his defense. He's really physical. He cheats. He gets 8 fouls a game. They call 4 of them. But remember that play when it went out on Middleton, but then they decided they reviewed it. But you watched the replay. Yeah, he's hugging Middleton. He's grabbing him.
He's a hugger.
He's learned all these tricks from
Chris
Paul.
All those hugs in game 4 as well. He's hugging everybody. He just has the love.
So combo of the durability of that, the fact that he's a younger guy, and then Harden, I don't know what the fuck shape he's going to be in. But I would take Harden just because of the ceiling's higher, but it's interesting that it's a conversation. So who do you have?
That's right. It's fun to have the conversation. I'm still going with Harden, but you know, the seeing it from Booker on this stage has been a revelation. And it's
revelation.
Great to have him ascend into super duper stardom, right? He was a superstar, but now he's a super duper star.
And a little alpha-y too, right?
Yeah, we gotta have to have it. He has to be the alpha because CP3 is hurt. And I'm going to stand by that. CP3 is hurt.
Where do you have Booker against vintage Andrew Toney? I brought this up with Jackie and Sarah on Thursday. Because you also revered Andrew Toney way back when.
Of course. But I mean, it's a different era. I mean, my recency bias, all I can see is Booker with all his flexibility, all of his creativity. Wait till we really see Booker as a genuine playmaker, right? This is the thing that he's bumping up against. Like he's almost there in terms of involving the guys. He could be the one kicking out to Cam Johnson in the corner, or to,
he did it in game
Mikhail
two.
Bridges, yeah, right.
He did in game two. They took away the lanes, and they just want Booker to be a scoring guard, which he's been 42 nights in a row on the finals is like nothing to sneeze at. FYI. Well,
it's also never happened before that a player scored 40 consecutive games and lost both games.
The thing with him, so in the playoffs, he's 28-6-5. He's only 34% from three. In the finals, he's 34-4. He's 32% from three. It is weird. It seems like he's such a better three-point shooter than the stats say.
He's not. the stats tell the truth.
The stats tell the truth, but if you're talking about what's this guy going to look like 3 years from now, that'll be the thing he adds, right? Same thing with Luka.
And assists. Like, I'd like to see him get a half dozen assists, and I'd like to see him get to the line 11 times a game.
Yeah. Well, he was awesome, but unfortunately, he's going to be a tough part of history with that play if the Bucks win, because the two plays that everyone's going to show from the series for the rest of eternity are the Giannis block.
Yes.
And the strip alley-oop, which kind of needs a play, right?
Well, I mean, and it really does
the
match
strip
up.
Oop?
you want a name. I don't like I'm not smart enough.
Strip and oop? That sounds like a place you would eat at.
I mean, we're
I'll go to Strip and Oops. They're selling chicken wings for half
there's
price.
There's a lot of things that could be happening at Strip and Oop that I would be into. I assure you. But,
every piece of Strip and Oops, you're signing up.
Yes, that's right. All the activities that might be going on in the Strip and Oop, my hands are raised.
I think Jalen's at Strip and Oops right now. Let's go, Jalen. What's going on?
I wish
at Strip
I was
and
there
Oops?
With them. But how about the fact that for this play, for these finals, the iconic plays for the Bucks are really defensive plays. And that really is the identity of the team and the reason why they have the narrowest of advantages over the Suns.
So Phoenix was a player short. And now they're two players short. They never got the buyout guy during the season.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, Blake would have been nice on this team.
I agree.
That would have been a good Suns, and you get Suns doctors, all that. And then they whiffed on the 2020 draft, which that poor Jalen Smith can't even play. They actually need him.
They
Kaminsky,
need him.
He's not playing either.
Well, I mean,
had to play 45 minutes last night.
It was supposed
ridiculous.
To be Saric. Can you believe that? It was supposed to be Saric, and that Saric not being there hurts them.
Well, they also could have traded Saric, right? They could have done a Saric and Green for, or Jalen Smith, not Green. So they had ways to maybe get better, and they didn't, and they're feeling it now.
Yeah, they're still pretty good, and
they're still really
the
good, but the finals comes down to, right. You know, the fact that Connaughton, who was incredible the last two games for what he is, you know, like I thought he was completely fearless. He had a couple threes yesterday when it was like the game was about to become a blowout in the first like quarter and a half. And he hit a couple big threes.
He did.
Middleton hit one.
Yep.
And then the other one was the two shots Middleton hit in the last couple minutes of the game. That one with Crowder, where Crowder, Crowder's in his landing spot. We've seen them call that all year.
Yeah.
Middleton lands on him. They don't call it because it's last 3 minutes. So they can't decide. And look, I don't want more fouls and more reviews, but I'm just saying, like, we were playing it one way all year. But he hit that one. Then he hit a crazy, it felt like their offense was falling, the 120 to 112,
And a shot clock, too.
Yeah. They were just like, it just felt like they were discombobulated. And then he hit another one. So he was, he's great. But yeah, I think Phoenix, they're just a guy short.
And if CP3 wasn't hurt, then they could gloss over it. They could cover over it. But he's diminished CP3.
Not having a backup big guy. And I think Coach Bud's actually done it. I think he was awful in game one. Game two, the Suns hit a shitload of threes. You can't do anything about that. But I think he's been really good the last couple games. I like when he stacks big. I thought his mistake yesterday was not playing Portis down the stretch, because it seems like every time they go smaller, Tucker plus minus, all that stuff.
You think Teague is there was a bad idea to put Teague in there? You didn't like that one?
I mean, look.
That
man,
was the comeback. I mean, he ushered in the comeback.
My team sucked, and Teague was our fifth best point guard this year. So I don't know how he ended up in the finals. Let's talk Middleton for a second. So there's like these old school sidekick guys, right? Like Sam Jones was like the best one. Neither of us were alive for the Sam Jones era, but it was always like the Celtics were awesome. And then Sam Jones would do some shit. And if you're down one with 10 seconds left, Sam Jones was the guy they went to. He'd make shots. And he was like, I had him, I think when I wrote my book, I had him like in the low 30s. Cause it was like this guy over and over again, just came through in every stage, could score even a little more than people thought. So there's been guys over the years. I think Tony was like that. We mentioned James Worthy, McHale became that for Bird. And then as we head into this century, it doesn't happen a lot in the finals, but 2005, remember Manu had that huge series against the Pistons when Duncan was he was kind of fading at the end of that season. 2008, Ray Allen. 2010, Gasol. 2011, the best version of this, Jason Terry.
Yeah.
Who was barely an all-star, but just had such huge balls in that series.
Yes.
2016, Kyrie, probably the most overqualified guy for this because Kyrie was really good, but he was so great in those last three games. And then Kyle Lowry, 2019. And the question with Middleton was always like, could he at least be that? Could he be on that list with those guys? And he answered it. He is.
Well, it was still to me an open question at 7:45 p.m. Eastern last night because we hadn't seen he and Holiday on the road,
right?
Shoot with confidence, and something definitely changed. And I also will give credit to Coach Bud for this in games three and four, the confidence that those guys developed, and you know, both of them showed up for the road game, and this was like, you know, it's the first road win in these finals, and it's all because of those two guys, 100% because those two guys. We're up to it. 44 minutes for Middleton, 42 minutes for Holiday. Both of them shot over 50%. And, you know, look at the numbers. 29 for Middleton, 27 for Holiday. Middleton with 7 rebounds, 5 assists, like complete games. 13 assists for Holiday. Those guys are the
difference. And good defense, too.
Great defense.
Did you like Middleton before these playoffs?
No.
I didn't really either. He left me lukewarm.
Yeah, I thought he was
like kind of Tobias Harris-y.
But we have a he has an identity now. And
he does.
And it's helpful. And again, I'll give Coach Bud credit for this. He's their closer. He's the one that touches it because Giannis needs to be a decoy between the combination of, you know, what the defense is doing in terms of the wall plus the free throw shooting.
But Giannis, the good thing with Giannis was he's closing now in these last 4 minutes. He's at least trying to figure out ways to, you know, put some points up, which I just felt like before it felt like they were crippled.
Yeah.
At the end of these games. It's really impressive. Did you see this list of teams that went down 2-0 and then won the title?
No.
How many people do you think are on it? How many teams?
Less than 8.
4.
Yeah, okay. That's less than 8.
69 Celtics, 77 Blazers, 2006 Heat, and the 2016 Cavs. And that one, I still feel like if Draymond doesn't punch LeBron in the balls, that series is over in 5. I will believe that the rest of my life. How about this stat? Game 6, home, up 3-2 since the ABA-NBA merger in 1976. How many times do you think that's happened?
What do you mean? Has it happened?
How many times have we had this specific situation? A team is home for game 6 with a chance to close and win the title.
I think a decent number of times. You know, 15 times?
11.
Okay.
What do you think the record of those teams are in the game 6? Chance to clinch at home game 6 up 3-2.
10-1.
You nailed it.
Hey, all right.
Our only outlier was 0-5.
Yeah.
San Antonio after the Horry game. They go back and they just did a stink bomb. But that Duncan, he was Olympics. He played like a shitload of games. So talk about like load management. Like that dude, he was running on fumes and they just sucked in game 6 and they lost. But the other times, 08 Celtics, 03 Spurs, 2000 Lakers, 97, 96 Bulls, 92 Bulls. 87 Lakers, 86 Celts, 82 Lakers, 77 Blazers. They all took care of business, which makes me think Milwaukee minus 5 or the Milwaukee money line tomorrow.
Maybe probably both.
I have Bucks in 6, so I don't need to do anything, but it would be very unconventional for them to lose this. But then on the flip side, even if Phoenix wins, they got to play 2 nights later in Phoenix.
Yep.
With Chris is like running on the fumes of his fumes right now.
Right. It does feel like
and you got 7 guys. So if anything, that weirdly might favor 7. There is the 74 Celtics had a chance to close at home. Famous double OT game. Kareem hits the sky hook on the corner over Hank Finkel because Cowan's fouled out.
Poor Hank Finkel.
My dad swears that I was at this game. I was 4 years old. I have no recollection of it. But then the Celts went to Milwaukee for game 7 and beat them.
Okay.
So we could see that. But I really think Milwaukee's figured it out. I think they've been better all 3 games. And I know you could say 2 of the games came down to 1 or 2 plays. But
and that's true.
I just think they have the best player. I think they have the best player in the series.
It's the turnovers and the rebounding is what, you know, to me, with Milwaukee having an advantage in both of those areas, that's the deciding factor.
We see, have you noticed, especially with the youngins, because we're old, everything has to be the greatest play, game, sequence, block. The hyperbole is pretty high. And after yesterday, it was like that one of the best finals games ever. I just want to point out, we've had a lot of good finals games. It's been a lot of good finals moments. The league's been around for 75 years.
It just feels like a relief because there was some concern with these two teams and the way the whole playoffs went. That it might be an underwhelming finals, and it's done better. It's much better than underwhelming.
Well, we're on a streak now of 3 straight awesome game 5s. Because last year was the Jimmy Butler, we're not ready to go home yet game against the Lakers. 2019 was one of the most dramatic, bizarre games in the history of the finals when Durant blows out his Achilles.
Oh man!
Second half. It's Clay and Curry and they're just like, fuck this, we're not losing. And Toronto has a chance to win the title and they don't.
Yeah.
But that was a really, really memorable game for 70,000 different reasons. 2018 game 1 was really good. That J.R. Smith game. 2017 game 3, go on YouTube, young ones, that time and watch that one where it's basically Kyrie and LeBron against KD, Curry, and Clay. And Kevin Love puts up a 1-for-9. It was like our three against your three, and Kevin Love's like, cool, I'm not going to make a shot. 2016, four and seven were good. Four was the one the Warriors win. It seemed like they clinched the finals. 2011, game two, when Dirk comes back from 15 and takes LeBron and Wade, and Wade does a little dance in front of the Dallas bench, and Dallas gets pissed, and Dallas comes back.
Yeah.
2013 at game six and seven. Game six was the best game of the century. And then 2010, game seven, Celtics Lakers. So just in the last 12 years, we've had some really good games.
Yeah,
is my
that's
point.
Good. It's good for you to call them out, and people can look them up
there's
on
some really
YouTube
good ones.
And enjoy
they're
it.
They're on YouTube. Just go do a little work. Not the everything NBA, has to be the greatest.
The NBA finals tend to be pretty effing good.
Yeah. Yeah. We've enjoyed it over the years.
We have.
All right. Here's my path. I'll ask you this. Can Phoenix win game six?
Sure. Yes. We've seen with this Phoenix team, if they start hitting threes, the biggest question is, how is the hyperbaric chamber that Chris Paul is sitting in right now? What are they pumping into there? And I'll stop making the jokes. Like, how's his body recovering, right? They've got ice. They're doing everything possible. Electric stimulation. Anything they can do, if he shows any semblance, and honestly, he was pretty effing good last night. Now we saw him, and
yeah, but you know what though, he was good in the fourth quarter.
I think
he can play a good quarter. I don't know if he can play a good game anymore.
Exactly. Russillo said he was disengaged. I'm not so sure that he was disengaged. I think he was, you know, load managing within the game to be ready for the possibility. They were still within shouting distance in the fourth quarter, and he willed them all the way to the precipice. A 1 point, you know, they're only down by one at that moment. So I absolutely, positively, there's no doubt that Phoenix can win game six. Yes, is my answer.
It's like when you go to strip and oops tonight, load management. You're not going to go hard for 4 hours, but there's going to be a couple great 45-minute stretches
and
in there.
I'm not breaking out the $20 bills right when I walk in the door. Just for, you know.
Here's my roadmap for Phoenix winning game six. Everything you just said about Chris Paul, the comeback, the Chris Paul semi-comeback game. I don't even think we need a full comeback game, semi-comeback game. More Cam Johnson.
I think he needs
30 minutes in this game. That dude... And I thought that was a terrible draft pick. I was wrong. But I think they need that guy's athleticism and his threes and like just a little rational confidence on both ends kind of guy over what Crowder's given them. They need one more really good Booker game. He doesn't have to score 40, but he still has to, you know, make the majority of his 2 points. They need Connaughton to suck. I mean, honestly, they need him to stink. They need him to cool off.
He's made everybody forget about Dante DiVincenzo.
I know. They need the same kind of missed free throw bullshit with the Bucks.
Yes.
And they need Drew Holiday to have, who is it, Mr. Hyde? Who is the bad one, Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde?
I think, I don't know. I think the doctor
whatever the
was bad,
bad
one
is, they need, whether it's Jekyll or Hyde, I can't remember who is the bad one. They need Holiday to suck again offensively. He's not going to suck defensively because he's great. But I think if you get all those... The danger is, and having been fortunate enough to been at closeout games in my life, especially when you have a slightly better team and you have the best player in the series, the danger is that second quarter when the crowd's like going nuts and the players can kind of start to smell it a little bit. And especially if you have the best player, there's an energy thing that happens and we could feel it. So the last one I went to for the Celts was the 08 game six against the Lakers, and KG in the second quarter, the bench brought him back, made a couple threes, and KG was just everywhere. And that game hit a point where you could feel it slipping away, and Jackson was calling timeouts. And same thing like with that 86 one I went to against the Rockets, like that was the third quarter where that happened. But there are these moments where the crowd and the other team, there's like this urgency because they know, like, man, if we don't stave this off, like, this is it. And you can kind of freeze from that. And that would be my fear for Phoenix, especially you're playing seven guys, you know? And it, like when Campaign is out there, they're down eight. and the Bucks can just like all of a sudden the Bucks are up 17 and that'll be it. The Phoenix won't be able to come back from that.
I don't know if that's if I agree with that, because I think that energy dynamic you're describing also always happens to that to the home team. Home team jumping out. I mean, I hate to put any kind of bad whammy on the Bucks, but I feel like, you know, first the Bucks first quarter, whatever it is, money line and whatever they're favored by for the first quarter, I'm betting both of those, right? Bucks in the first quarter. But then similar to what we saw last night with the Suns, that you jump out to a big lead.
And crowds then, in a frenzy.
Yes. And then the other team makes a couple shots and then all of a sudden.
And then the energy shifts.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, we've seen the flip side of this where it's like, I'm going to the finals tonight and my team's going to win for the first time in 50 years. I've paid an incredible amount of money for these tickets and this is going to be the greatest moment of my life. And then you're down 8 in the third quarter and it's just panic time. You're like, what happened?
All those scenarios were at play here.
Do you want to dip into some of your experiences in the first and second round with the Bullets over the last 40 years? Because those are the only two rounds you've experienced.
That's not nice, but I will say I'm happy to have Wes Unseld Jr. manning the helm here.
Happy this to have an perfect, Unseld back.
It's a very low consequence situation. So let this guy have the opportunity, an iconic figure for the franchise. The ceiling is not very high. He's not going to fail. And he just needs to mind the store for a couple years while the almost Bullets reboot from the Davis Bertans disaster.
How did you feel about LeBron picking last night, the weekend of when his movie came out, to finally go see his alleged close buddy Chris Paul play in person?
Most predictable thing ever. What do you mean? How did I
feel? He went to a WNBA game last round over the Clippers Suns, like game 6. He was like 5 minutes away. He couldn't have cared less. Oh, my movie's coming out this weekend? All right. I think those are all my notes. Just that the only other one I had was I made KOC look up on Second Spectrum all the Tucker numbers, trying to figure out why the fuck he's playing so much. Booker's 14 for 24 against one-on-ones against Tucker in the finals.
It's just because you said it much earlier. He's just a trusted person out there, right? Coach Bud feels like he can trust him. Whether it's true or not, he just feels like it.
And knows how to box out. It's great box outs.
And you know, he is always hysterical when a foul is called against him. So, you know, he softens
incredible reactions.
Yes. Can't believe he's ever been called for a foul. I mean, that counts for something.
Reminds me of my wife's reaction when Jalen ate three twice-baked potatoes at July 4th when she only made 13. Same kind of PJ Tucker reaction. He
should have been at the strip-a-noop.
Well, maybe that's where he headed after. That's all I have for these finals. I think we hit all my topics. So we'll take a break. We'll talk a little golf and some football features. All right, so the golf. The majors are in the books. Our guy John Rahm got one.
Morikawa
put his stake in the ground for best young player in his 20s, potentially, other than maybe John Rahm. We had Noel Tigre. Spieth did a lot of sniffing. Sniffed around. Felt like his confidence was rebuilt in a lot of ways. And then Louis Oosthuizen became part of rings culture. I think he's on that list with Chris Paul and Barkley and Malone, but just classic Louis. What are the other, before we get into what happened today, what were the other big storylines from these four majors that you cared about? Were those it or was there another one?
Well, we had an unbelievable run of 7 majors in the last calendar year because of, you know, the pandemic. So we had the PGA Championship in August of 2020. And between August of 2020 and mid-July 2021, 7 majors competed with like incredible. The winners are Colin Morikawa, Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, Hideki Matsuyama, Phil effing Mickelson, John Rahm, and Colin Morikawa again. So think about that circle and that cycle. Morikawa at the beginning with no fans. And then on the backside of this, at the Open Championship, that was the only major last year that deferred. They said, we're not going to compete it because they couldn't you know, get themselves confident that they could host a tournament over there. And they had an insurance policy. They took advantage of that. So it's been an unbelievable.
I like how you waited to get to that point, which was really the point they postponed it.
Yeah.
They actually made money postponing it.
They couldn't. They really, the problem, although I would have enjoyed it with the Open Championship, is the weather. You have like a 6 week window weather wise, you know, over there, you know, but anything that you start getting into September and it might snow.
This was the least amount of any major I watched over the last few years was this Open this week. Well, I was just burned out. There was too many majors in a row. I was in on the hoops. It's summertime. I'm just going to watch the last round. I don't really care what else happens.
It's been a while since coffee golf was in our lives, but this is coffee golf, right? This is, you wake up in the morning, it's on, you check the leaderboard, you have your nice pot of coffee there, and you have to like rebuild that familiarity, the relationship that you've had your whole life with the British Open. But I was up to it. I enjoyed it. I love waking up at, you know, Thursday morning, I was up it was like 6:15, laying in bed, didn't move, but I was able to watch some golf. It's just, and especially the scene of it, right? It's not like anything you see here in the States. It's links. It's the colors are all different. The guys are wearing long clothes and stuff in the middle of the summer. It's hot here in DC, and the guys are wearing long. I mean, I love it. So
do we get Ryder Cup this year or no?
Yeah. So look, we have big time golf on the horizon. The Olympics is going to be super interesting. That's 2 weeks away. And then the PGA Tour Championship, which is, you know, the FedEx Cup playoffs and everything. It's fine. It's just an opportunity, though, to see the great players again come together in August, which it'll be good. And then the Ryder Cup in September. So there's still a lot of opportunity to see some great golf and a lot of intriguing storylines, not the least of which is Bryson DeChambeau, who is going to go be teammates with Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas. And who am I forgetting? Xander Schauffele.
Brooks?
It's Schauffele. It's Xander, Morikawa, DeChambeau going over to the Olympics.
Oh, I got you.
And they're, you know, he's representing America, but he's been on this streak of brand management because he got out of his own way between his feud with Brooks and then complaining about his equipment at this Open Championship, which was the dominant theme.
I love anytime it's a long paragraph apology to somebody's business relationship, you know something horrible happened.
It was awesome because Cobra and he have like a mutually assured destruction kind of relationship. Like, Cobra doesn't, not a lot of pros play the Cobra equipment. Bryson is by far their best player. Ricky plays it and Jason Duffner plays it. But Bryson, you know, they have indeed gone crazy trying to meet his needs over the years, and his reinvention of his approach to golf over the last year, really just calendar year, all the weight he put on and all the swing speed and everything, the pressure that put on Cobra to try and meet him where he wanted to be met has been astonishing. And the representative is like, bro, you got to slow your roll. And we're going to tell you right now politely to go fuck yourself, because all we've done is try and accommodate you at every turn. And Bryson, to his credit, snapped too. His representative wrote a wonderful apology for him.
Aaron Rodgers was like, I loved what you did, biting back at somebody that works with you. Our Olympics odds on FanDuel. By the way, we would never criticize FanDuel the way that Bryson went at Cobra. We love
FanDuel. We would never. No,
FanDuel's great.
Absolutely.
Nobody would ever say anything bad about FanDuel. John Rahm is 5-1. JT is 10-1. Morikawa is 10-1. Schauffele's 10-1. Rory 10-1. And Bryson is 11-1. Those are our best odds. Then it gets into like this Matsuyama 12-1, Hovland 14, Casey 22, Shane Lowry 22, Abe Anser 29. And then it gets crazier. My guy Tommy Fleetwood is 33-1. Tommy Fleetwood might not be my guy anymore. Anyway, who do you like, House?
Well, I mean, those odds are all brutal odds. You know, it is a smaller field, so it is the kind of field where there are maybe only like 15 guys that can win. I want to sit down and look at the course a little bit and just formulate a game plan around who's going to adapt the best to being over there. Who's going to be able to handle the COVID stuff?
So we're staying away. We're going to stay away. But on fairway rolling, you do it.
It might be a little bit of a lean towards the Asian players because it's really like Hideki. On the one hand, it'll be the most pressure he probably will have ever felt. But on the other hand, he just won the Masters, so he's playing with house money. Yeah. And he deliberately did not compete in the Open Championship because he had COVID a handful of weeks ago. And he was like, I'm just not in the right kind of shape to go over to Britain and try and compete, all that travel and everything. So I'm going to look and see who says they've been, you know, in Asia for a few weeks, acclimating to the time change and all that kind of stuff, and probably bet that way.
Speaking of acclimating, yes. Football. Got Warren Sharp's book in the mail this week.
Our guy
Sharpie. Nice big
officially,
fat one.
Yeah. That's right. Nice 463 pages.
Jesus.
The 2021 football preview.
If you love Sharp, you heard him with House on the Ringer NFL show last season, and you'll be hearing him on the Ringer airwaves again this year. He also does this giant book that has all his tendencies and it's become kind of one of the Bibles for if you care about gambling.
I agree.
It's like you kind of have to read it. We're going to quickly talk just a couple win total and playoff bets. So you mentioned the one that you can't believe is the Titans. The Titans right now on FanDuel, the over is 9. It's -150. Make your case for why we should be betting over on this. By the way, 17-game season, which I'm going to keep saying every time we talk about football bets over the next 2 months. 17-game season. So
yeah,
it's so not 9-7 anymore. Could be 10-7.
Yeah, 10-7 wins that bet. 9-8 pushes that bet. And I think division is going to be an absolute train wreck. Houston and Detroit are going to compete for the worst team in the NFL this upcoming season.
Houston hasn't figured out the Watson situation at all. We have no idea what's going to happen with that, but he's clearly not playing for them this year, it doesn't seem like.
It seems very unlikely that he's playing for them.
And they were bad anyway.
I can't wait to fade the Colts this season. I just can't believe the idea that Carson Wentz is salvageable is any kind of reclamation possible whatsoever.
They have a lot of blue chippers, though. That would be my only fear with that.
Well, the one thing with the Colts is...
You loved them last year. I think you're just butthurt. I think you just lost too much money in the Colts last year.
I want to know who their backup quarterback ultimately is going to be. That's the decision for me with the Colts, right?
You know, you're that down on Wentz.
Oh, what proof is there that he's capable of being a winning starting quarterback? When was the last time he was a winning starting quarterback? It's been some years.
Racking my brain. Anyway,
it's been some years.
So you like Tennessee?
Because I'm fading the Colts. Houston is a debacle, and Jacksonville, first year Trevor Lawrence and first year Urban Meyer.
The Urban Meyer thing is a bigger piece than Lawrence.
Sure.
We have no idea if that dude. We've seen college coaches. Remember when Spurrier came and coached your team for a couple years? How'd that go?
Oh, my God. Not that's one of the ones I've also filed so deeply and far away from my consciousness.
You've buried more bad sports experiences than any friend I have. Just these... 2 year aberration that were like the Andre Blatt, 3 years with Andre Blatt, just burned in the back of your head, gone.
I have a World Series and a Stanley Cup in the last 5 years. So
congrats.
I'm not complaining.
Can I give you an alternate Titans bet?
Let's hear it.
Because they have alt win totals on FanDuel.
Okay.
Over 10.5 wins, +170.
Yep. I'll do that. I'll gladly do that.
11-6.
Fine.
Over 8.5 wins is -175.
I don't want to lay all that juice. It's too much juice. I'm confident, but I just don't. Yeah, you know, I tie up my money that way.
Your dumbass team. Over 9.5 wins is +180.
That's an alternative line, right?
Alternate line. Over 8.5 is +100. So you get even odds.
So 9 and 8,
even odds.
Man, Fitzmagic. And Heineke. That's what I'm betting on.
I thought your team was good last year. Like, because they went toe to toe with Tampa for three quarters.
And they've made some really nice additions, like the combination potentially of Curtis Samuel, like a sleeper kind of fantasy kind of dude. Keep your eye on this connection between Fitzmagic and Samuel. Like, yeah. There's a couple things about getting vertical. Scott Turner is dying to get vertical. I mean, he hasn't had a quarterback here capable of throwing the ball down the field in, you know, since he's been here.
So you, over 8.5, you kind of like
Yeah, I do. I do like over 8.5. 9 feels fine. And by the way, I don't think they're going to win the NFC East. I think Dallas is.
Pats.
Sorry, cuz.
Pats over 9 is my lock of the year. There's no way we're not going 10-7.
I still have reservations
now,
at the quarterback
off.
Position.
No.
I have reservations, Bill Simmons.
We'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, okay. we tried that last year. They were not
fine. Who else do you have? What are some of your other favorites?
I like the Eagles under. Let's see what the number is right now. What's the number on FanDuel?
I have under 6.5.
Oh,
plus 120. A little low.
Well, so 6 and 11. That's tough. Although I will say this, they are one of one in terms of this scheduling debacle. I think they play 4 games in 17 days. Which is just so grossly unfair in this era where the league is allegedly, you know, much more focused on player safety and, you know, getting the guys the opportunity to recover. And that bet for me is a combination of the dunderhead coach, who I absolutely think we're going to love because we need an Adam Gase replacement. And I think this moron is just the guy.
I'm going to love his press conferences.
Yes, they're already wonderful. And then that schedule fuck that they have, they got schedule fucked. So that's a little under. I'll play a little bit on that one. And then
don't forget meager talent.
Hurts, one of the stats in Warren's book that I saw very quickly is he had the lowest completion percentage, compared to expected completion of any of 38 quarterbacks in the league last year. Small sample size. But still, not completing the way he should.
You like the Giants over 7?
I don't know. I think maybe like right at 7. 7-10 sounds like a Giants record to me.
Wait, I have a fun intermission for you.
Oh.
My son, Ben Simmons, back from IMG camp.
Does he have clothes on?
He's now 5'8". Ben, come over here for 1 second. Can you just... There's House, your buddy.
House!
Wow! He's like, you're almost a man, Ben Simmons.
I know.
What's
Look
going
at his
on?
House, can you give, Ben, can you give House your Space Jam review? Take your gum out. Give me your gum.
I sold it. Okay. It was all right.
It was all right. Okay.
It was all right?
It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. It was just all right.
Like, what was your favorite part about it?
The ending.
The ending
Don't
was
tell
good?
Me.
No,
Don't
I
ruin
mean,
it.
The movie was over.
Oh, that it ended? That was your favorite part?
Yeah. It was terrible. The acting was bad. The plot didn't make any sense.
Was LeBron a good actor or no?
LeBron was okay.
You like LeBron, though. His generation loves LeBron.
I like LeBron, too. I don't have any problem
I
with
like
LeBron.
I like him, but sometimes I feel like I have to swim against the stream. Just
Ben,
just
don't tell
fun.
Me who wins the game. I know there's a big game.
So what was your final grade? C+?
Like a B minus B.
Well, for him, that's like a D+ because he likes everything. All right. Thanks,
okay.
Ben.
Thanks,
really
Ben.
Electric appearance from you.
He has a 14-year-old boy things to do.
Yeah. I don't know where. It looks like there's some skateboarding. He'll probably be breaking something in about 5 minutes. All right. Give me more over-unders.
I'm looking at the Rams. Tell me what the Rams number is right
now. I looked at them as well. So they are over 10.5 is +125. They'd have to go 11-6. I love that
I like
one.
That. I'm on that one this year, and I'm also going to play McVay for coach of the year. Those odds are not out yet, but I'm on McVay. I think that the synergy between him and you know the significant, it cannot be overstated, significant improvement at the quarterback position and how vertical they're capable of getting.
Well, they're also built to be good for this year. They traded 130 draft picks. Like
the only thing
built for this season,
they have they are 22. They have exactly 22 great players, I think, and then nothing behind it. So they really can't take on big injury, whatever that stat is. And you can't have a ton of injury games if you like the Rams over.
Whatever that stat is, you mean injuries?
Yes. Well, it's like missed games due to injury, that whole thing.
Their alt win totals on FanDuel, 11.5 is plus 210. So if it go 12-5.
That's not far-fetched.
Over 12.5 is plus 390. They have to go 13-4.
No, I'm not doing that.
The reason I bring this up is every year in the old 16-game schedule, somebody would always go 13-3 or 14-2, right? Every year, yes, we'd have the one team. So if you think the Rams can be the one seed in the NFC, I would recommend the plus 390 over 12.5 because somebody's going to go 13-3 and be the one seed. So why not them?
Who are the contenders in your mind as we sit here today, you know, in the middle of July? As
the
we just
one
start
seed contenders?
Turning on our football brains, because it's not Green Bay. It's not New Orleans. Is it? I mean,
It's Tampa, it's Green Bay if Rodgers comes back, and it's San Francisco.
Yeah, okay. So you do have FanDuel, San Francisco.
Well, not only do I have it, but on FanDuel, their division odds are better than the Rams' division odds.
Because that San Francisco concept really puts a lot of pressure on Jimmy G, doesn't it? Isn't he still the starting quarterback?
He is, but they came within, one in completion of winning a Super Bowl with him.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago.
So that's your case against the win totals
with the Rams.
It's just their division. They have the Niners, the Seahawks, and the Cardinals, and those teams are 500 or better unless Kingsbury falls apart. But yeah, the Niners are plus 185. I don't know. The Saints, I guess, sometimes we write them off and then all of a sudden they're 5-1 or 6-1. But I don't like them this year.
They're a stay away. And then Jameis Winston, you want to bet on Jameis Winston?
Atlanta seems like a year away. There's really not a lot of good teams in the NFC. That's another reason I think the win totals thing, because neither of us like the NFC East. NFC North, it's the Packers, and they're going to have that Rodgers soap opera the whole year.
I honestly think Minnesota might be, I might do a tiny bit on Minnesota as a little bit of a NFC North sleeper.
I'm still kind of staring Atlanta down.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one as well.
I think people fell off them because they traded Julio, and it's like, I'm not sure what Julio was for them at this point. He's a receiver heading into his mid-30s.
So Arthur Smith.
FedEx yeah. Arthur.
Yes, exactly. Arthur Smith, they had the most one-score loss games of any team in the NFL last year. Yes, and so... You and Schrager might have already talked about this a little bit.
I've been on them for a while. I didn't want them to trade Julio, but now I feel like the Julio thing has screwed up people's perception of them. Their win total is 7.5.
I'm going to play the. I'm playing the over for them. I like the over for them.
I like the over 8.5 is plus 140. So it was 9-8.
Juiced odds. Nine and eight. That's a good season.
I'm also thinking. I think there was a lot of smoke and mirror shit with Arizona last year. And if you really, I lost some bets on them last year where I was like, wow, this team's actually probably not that good. And their over is at 8. So the under is plus 110, which would be 7-10. But you think NFC West is loaded.
Yeah.
So they went like 1-5 against the other three teams in that division. And then at that point.
Even 2-4. Which is not like implausible.
Yeah, 2-4. 2-4 is not great either. And then they're 500 the rest of the way and they lose. I'm just starting my research. As soon as the finals ends, we got the draft.
Yeah. We have the book. It's a 463-page book which just came out, for Christ's sakes. But we're just talking some early feels, some early things that we like that we've seen out there.
I have the first 2 weeks of August. I'm, for the first time in the history of this podcast, I'm just taking 2 weeks off.
Wow.
We're just going to have no podcast in this feed. I'm not doing stupid gimmick shit. It's just out. So
good.
I'm going to use part of those 2 weeks to read Warren Sharp's book and a whole bunch of other magazines and really, really be ready. Because I want this to be like, I felt like we had so much momentum on this podcast with the playoffs last year. Schrager's going to be on every Thursday.
Yeah, you guys,
our picks.
You and Schrager were cleaning up.
We're doing great. He's having a good flying coach season right now, which I hope people are listening to that podcast because they're
terrific.
I think he's had 8 coaches, but really good. The Shanahan pod was, I think, one of the best pods we've run this year.
I loved it so much. The funniest thing, of course, was him talking about, well, we ran the ball, whatever percentage he's claiming they ran the ball in the Super Bowl. I mean, buddy, that's not the stat that anybody cares about. You just needed to fall down 3 times. And not you lose yardage and then kick a field goal to win the Super Bowl. That's
and he didn't totally want to throw Matt Ryan under the bus.
Well, but, I mean, but, why was he dropping back to pass? Whose fault is that?
Right.
It's fine.
Hey, quickly, Miami.
Yeah.
Overs 9.5. That seems high.
It's just too. I like
it's a 10-7 for Tua.
We're asking a lot out of Tua. Now that defense is legit.
It's a good team. Good team, well coached.
Yep, exactly. But man, I need to know what I'm getting out of Tua, and I really need to know what I'm getting out of the backup. No more Fitzmagic in Miami to bail him out.
Last thing for you, and then we'll go. The Olympic basketball odds.
We're on this. We're doing this year. We've had success before with this.
I've already stepped in.
Oh, you didn't even tell me. You cheated on me.
I did. Well, because I knew you would do it, and the odds hadn't changed. And I did Slovenia at 25-1.
I'm on that. You know I'm on that. That's just who do we think?
That's just a smart bet. It's just like, could Luka beat this weird American team by himself?
That's right.
Yeah, he actually could.
That's it.
Or could this weird USA team get beaten by somebody else, and then Luka has some, you know, Phoenix Suns like path where he's in the finals? Because he got caught some breaks and played really well.
That's right.
So
that's the bet.
I studied Slovenia's team a little bit, hoping to recognize anybody else's name other than Luka. I could not, but they beat a Lithuania team that had Jonas Valanciunas and Sabonis on it.
Is there not another pro on Slovenia?
It's like not anybody anyone's heard of.
Okay.
So US is -370 on FanDuel. Australia is +500.
Yeah, I'm betting that.
Spain is 14-1.
I'm betting that.
You're betting Spain?
Yeah, sure. Yes. They have NBA players. I'm betting all the teams that have NBA players. I'm betting Nigeria. I'm going to bet Nigeria to medal. Not to win, but to medal.
France is 23-1. Slovenia 25-1. Nigeria 29-1. I was intrigued by the Nigeria odds until I remembered Mike Brown was the coach. Then it's a nice story, but come on, Mike Brown's not going to win the gold medal.
Is there a bronze? Maybe there's a bronze. We'll be able to bet that as it gets closer.
I'm shocked by the Australia odds.
What, the 5-1?
That's way too high.
If you told me it was +160, I would bet it. Not even kidding. So plus odds for Australia.
The parallel 04, which we won on Argentina, one of our greatest wins. You joined me on that one, didn't you?
Yes. Oh, yes, I did. And the money mattered back then, believe me.
Manu, Luis Scola, I think was on that team, but Manu specifically.
Yeah.
And was kind of the superstar of that team. But they were good. It was like Manu and a bunch of role guys. You need the guy who can go toe-to-toe. When we almost lost to Spain in 2012, they had both Gasols. Those guys were like, we can actually legitimately get, and they had Juan Carlos Navarro and Jose Calderon. Like, that was a good team. Slovenia, it's just Luka against the world. And, you know, if it's like Durant, Tatum, Dame, we have no Bradley Beal now. JaVale McGee's on this team. They have 6 guys I trust. I guess Middleton and Booker are going to be on there. Maybe Booker will make me feel better about this team. Because the other way I was thinking was USA -370, we might never get better odds than that ever, right? They're adding Middleton, Booker, and Drew Holiday to this team.
Yep. I still like the other teams.
Well, they should have a bet like just the field.
Yeah.
It's like USA is -370. Just give me all the other teams.
Well, yeah, we'll have to lay juice for that. Which is fine. You're right, by the way. It was Manu, it was Luis Scola, Oberto, Andres Nocioni.
Oh, Fabrizio Oberto. Yeah. Yep. Oh, Nocioni. I like
Nocioni,
them.
Yeah. Delfino, yeah, Carlos good. Delfino. They were good.
All right. So then that hurts the Slovenia bet, because then the blueprint is you need five NBA type guys. Because that's what Spain had. Spain really could have won in 08 or in 12. They could have beaten us.
Australia kind of fits it, though.
For the people listening at home who are probably outraged that House and I would bet against America in the Olympics, we don't see red, white, and blue when we gamble. We see green. Our national color is green. Well, it's basically the no-win scenario of all time. If America wins, we're great. We're American. If they lose, then it'd be like, I told you they were going to lose. At least I made money for it. So we can't lose either way. All right, House, we'll hear you on Fairway Rolling. And and come back on Ringer NFL Show near the end of the year. And and you have no first-round pick, as usual, in the NBA draft next week.
Yes, yeah, we do. We have the 15th.
I thought you traded it for Westbrook.
I thought that was 23 because you're not allowed.
Oh, so you do have a first round pick.
I think so. I'm pretty sure that's true.
I like some of the guys in that 13 to 15 range.
Yeah, we need an athletic. We need to figure out a player to help solve the catastrophe that is Davis Bertans. So we need like another athletic defending rim running kind of player.
We argued about it on this pod, and you defended the Bertans signing.
He defended it. I did not know how bad he was defensively. He literally, there's not one player in the entire NBA that I would feel comfortable saying he can defend.
Who's winning game six?
The Milwaukee Bucks. Congratulations to Milwaukee Nation.
I think so as well. Giannis now minus 430 for finals MVP.
I got him at plus 130.
Yeah, there you go. All right, House. Great to see you. Good job by
you. Good times. Good job by you.
All right, that's it for the podcast. Back Tuesday night, me and Russillo. We are going to be in person for the first time since pre-pandemic. We're going to watch Game 6 together, and then we're going to do a podcast about it. So that is coming up. This podcast was produced by the one and only Kyle Creighton. I will see you on the Rewatchables feed on Monday for Fight Club, and then I will see you on this feed for Tuesday for Game 6. We'll see if the Bucks can close it. See you then.